Chapter 25. Second Wave. Changes. Betrayal. It was the battle to begin the war. The Urgal Depression was churned to ruination beneath the boots and tank treads of countless thousands of Astartes warriors and their legions' armor divisions. The loyal Primarchs could be found where the fighting was thickest. Korax of the Raven Guard, borne aloft on black wings, bound to a fire-breathing flight pack. Lord Ferus of the Iron Hands, at the heart of the battlefield, his silver hands crushing any traitors that came within reach, while he pursued and dragged back those who sought to withdraw. And lastly, Vulcan of the Salamanders, armoured in overlapping artificer plating, thunder clapping from his warhammer as it pounded into yielding armour, shattering it like porcelain. The traitorous Primarchs slew in mirror image to their brothers. Angron of the World Eaters, hewing with wild abandon as he raked his chain blades left and right, barely cognizant of who fell before him. Fulgrim of the lamentably named Emperor's Children, laughing as he deflected the clumsy sweep of Iron Hands warriors, never stopping in his graceful movements for even a moment. Mortarion of the Death Guard, in disgusting echo of ancient Terran myth, harvesting life with each reaving sweep of his scythe. And Horus, War Master of the Imperium, the brightest star and greatest of the Emperor's sons. He stood, watching the destruction while his legions took to the field, their liegelord content in his fortress rising from the far edge of the ravine. Shielded and unseen by his brothers, still waging war in the Emperor's name, Horus's lips were never still. He spoke continuous orders to his aides, who transmitted them across to the embattled warriors. His eyes remained narrowed as he watched the carnage playing out on the stage below, orchestrated and guided by his own will. At last, above this maelstrom of grinding ceramite, booming tank cannons and chattering bolters, the gunships, drop pods and assault landers of the second wave burned through the atmosphere on screaming thrusters. The sky fell dark with a weak sun eclipsed by 10,000 avian shadows, and the cheering roar sent up by the loyalists was loud enough to shake the air itself. The traitors, the bloodied and battered legions loyal to Horus, fell into a fighting withdrawal without hesitation. Argyltal watched all of this from the cockpit of Rising Sun as the Thunderhawk swooped low, engines howling as they carried it over the warring armies. A host of Wordbearers' landing craft, the colour of their hulls matching the bleak weather of this cold world, headed for the ravine's edges.
"This is far enough. Set down," he ordered Malnor, who was piloting. "By your word."
The two crimson gunships, among the leaders of the Grey Pack, began their downward drift. The Wordbearer's chosen landing site was close to the spread of terrain used by the Raven Guard in the initial assault, and the flock of regal granite-grey aircraft touched down alongside their charcoal-black twins. Affirmation pulses chimed across the beleaguered Vox network as the four legions' landers hit their marks. The tide was turned at the 11th hour. Horus and his rebels broke into full retreat, fleeing back to their fortress. Argyltal walked down the gang ramp and into his first filtered breath of Istvan V's air. It was cold, cold and coppery, with a rich earthy smell of churned mud and the ever-present smog of thruster exhaust. A quick scan through his eye lenses showed the panoramic view of the unfolding battle, where the Night Lord's Corvidish gunships were coming down on one flank and the Alpha Legion's war machines on the other. The main Wordbearer force bolstered both of their brother legions on the depression sides, and for a brief uplifting moment, Argyltal saw the flash of grey, ivory and gold that marked out Lorgar among the exalted First Company. Then the Primarch was gone, stolen by distance, smoke, and the press of too many gunships between here and there. The Iron Warriors had claimed the highest ground, taking the Loyalist landing site with all the appearance of reinforcing it through the erection of prefabricated plasteel bunkers. Bulk landers dropped the battlefield architecture, dense metal frames fell from the cargo claws of carrier ships at low altitude, and as the platforms crashed and embedded themselves in the ground, the craftsmen warriors of the 4th Legion worked, affixed, bolted, and constructed them into hastily rising firebases. Turrets rose from their protective housing in the hundreds, while hordes of lobotomized servitors trundled from their holds of Iron Warrior's troopships, single-minded in their intent to link with a weapons system's interfaces. All the while, Perturabo, Primarch of the Fourth Legion, watched with passionless pride. He wore layered ceramite that would have looked at home as a tank's armor plating, and clicking, crunching servos in his joints announced even the smallest shift in his stature. Occasionally, he would spare a moment's glance for the representatives from the other legions among his number, nodding acknowledgement to the word-bearers and Night Lord's captains sharing his defensive bastions. The nod spoke volumes when coupled with the Primarch's bitter eyes. Without even the pretense of respect, he acknowledged their presence and warned them to be about their business. Let them remain here as their Primarchs had ordered, so long as they did not interfere. The Iron Warriors did not need them getting in the way. All the while, the sounds of warfare's industry rattled and ground on, and the fire-based structures lifted higher, their battlements forming and defensive cannons whirring as they took aim down at the central plain. Argeltal and Zaphon led the Gal Vorbak away from their Thunderhawks, through the statuary of landed gunships, and through to the barricades being raised by the metallic forms of the Iron Warriors. The ground trembled gently with the tread of Astarte's boots as the word-bearers seconded to Argeltal's command, closed ranks, and followed. Thousands of warriors awaited his signal, their companies and chapters marked by banners raised high. Down the line, past the mounting masses of Iron Warriors' battle tanks and assembling Astartes, Argeltal could make out the cloaked form of First Captain Sevatar and his first company elite, the Atramentar. Bronze chains wrapped their armor, leashing weapons to fists as the Night Lords made ready for the coming signal.
"We are to be the anvil,"
Zaphon voxed to the gathered word-bearers as they waited by the barricades.
"We are the anvil, while our brothers form the hammer yet to fall. The enemy will stagger back to us exhausted, clutching empty bolters and broken blades, believing our presence to be a reprieve. The Iron Hands have damned themselves by remaining in the field, but you see the survivors of two legions coming to us even now. The Salamanders, the Raven Guard. We must hold them long enough for our brothers to annihilate them from the flanks and the rear."
Argeltal had tuned out already. He watched the battle breaking apart, seeing the defiant Iron Hands contingent ringing their Primarch at the heart of the battlefield. The righteous indignation that kept them there would see them slain before any others. The forest green of Salamander Ceramite formed a withdrawing mass, scrambling its way back uphill to the Iron Warrior barricades over to the east, while the battered black armor of the Raven Guard warriors came towards the unified Night Lords and Wordbearers force. The Loyalists' shattered unit cohesion was already beginning to reform, reshaping around bannered sergeants as they marched up the incline. Argeltal swallowed a mouthful of something that tasted like poisoned blood. He couldn't keep himself from salivating.
"Raum," he said silently,
but there was no answer. In a bizarre moment of clarity, he realized he could feel the wind against his skin. Not the focused feeling of pressure from a puncture in his warplate, but all over, a faint breath of wind against his flesh, as if his war gear had grown dull nerves, capable of recognizing external sensation. His hands began to ache again, and this time the pain brought something new, the sense of swelling, stretching, the torture of his own body meat rendered as malleable as clay, with the brittle creaking of bones still inside. Targeting circles that he hadn't activated started to spin before his eyes, flickering across the blue lenses in search of prey. Beneath them, the Raven Guard in their thousands marched up the rise of land. Not a single one had escaped with his armor unscarred from the battle below. Despite their distance, Argeltal's vision was keen enough to make out how individual warriors marched with their bolters slung, out of ammunition, and oaths of moment reduced to burned, flapping parchment rags in the wind.
60 seconds,
he growled into the vox.
"By your word,"
chorused 3,000 warriors in the ranks alongside him. Dagotal sat in his saddle, looking over the barricades. The repulsor drive built into his jet bike's chassis hummed in sympathy with his movements, whining louder as the rider leaned forward to watch the withdrawing Raven Guard draw nearer. His task was to skirt the battle's edges, cutting down any stragglers that sought to escape from the main melee. Although only five of his outriders had survived the transition into the Gal Vorbach so many years before, they sat at his side now, gunning their engines in readiness for what they were committed to do. He blinked burning sweat from his eyes, breathing in laboured rasps, trying to ignore the voice howling in his mind. The pain in his throat had been building in intensity for hours, to the point where swallowing caused excruciating pain. Now even breathing was a trial. Venom dripped down his chin, bubbling hot, from his overworking saliva glands. The acidic poison dripped over his lower teeth every few seconds, and he could no longer bear to swallow and neutralize it.
30 seconds, came Argal Tal's order.
Dagotal murmured meaningless syllables with a wet voice, as acid hissed from his helm's mouth grill. Torgal thumbed a gear rune on his chain axis control, shifting settings from soft tissue to armor plating. A thicker second layer of jagged teeth slid forward alongside the first. In truth, a chain-bladed weapon would always struggle to do more than strip the paint from layered ceramite, but it would chew through fiber-bundled armor joints or exposed power cables with ease. He had been weeping blood, without feeling sorrow or any emotion at all, for an hour. Had he been able to remove his helm, Torgal was certain the scarlet tracks would be stained across his cheeks by now, darkening the skin with a tattoo's permanence. Each time he blinked, his tear ducts flushed more of the watery blood fluid down his face. When his tongue moved in his mouth, it slid along a maw of jagged teeth that cut his tongue open, and he tasted coppery pain for the few seconds it took the little slice wounds to seal. Blood, thick and dark, was leaking from the knuckle joints of his gauntlets, cementing his fingers to the haft of his axe. He couldn't open his hand. He couldn't release the weapon, no matter how he tried.
20 seconds, said Argal Tal.
Torgal closed his eyes to blink them clear, but they wouldn't open again. Malnor's breath soared in and out of his vocalizer grill. A chorus of voices assailed him, and for the briefest moment he believed he was listening to the sounds of everyone he had ever met in his life. There was a tremor in his bones that he couldn't suppress.
10 seconds, came Argal Tal's voice. Stand ready.
Malnor's twitched head turned to the advancing ranks of the Raven Guard. Distance markers flashed across his retinal display, flickering as it recognized individual squad sigils on their shoulder guards. Malnor grinned and clutched his bolter tighter.
Brothers, the voice crackled. This is Captain Torizian, 29th Company, Raven Guard.
At the vanguard of the marching Astartes, a cloaked captain raised his hand in greeting. A spent bolter was maglocked to his thigh, and a gladius glinted in his left hand. The captain's cloak, once a regal blue, was a ragged ruin. Argal Tal raised his own hand in response and replied over the vox,
This is Argal Tal, Lord of the Gal Vorbach. Word bearer's legion. How goes the battle, brother?
The Raven Guard leader laughed as he came closer.
The traitorous dogs already flee the field, but they fight like bastards, each and every one. In Teller's name, it is a blessing to see you. Our Primarch has ordered us back for resupply, but Lord Korax is an unselfish man. He would not wish us to steal all the glory on this day of days.
Argal Tal could hear the smile in the other warrior's voice as he continued,
Good hunting down there, all of you. Glory to the word-bearers. Glory to the Emperor.
The commander of the Gal Vorbach didn't reply. The advancing Raven Guard were almost at the barricades. He felt his muscles bunching and twitching with sick need.
Brother,
asked Torizian. The captain's armor was an older Mark III Ironclass suit, blocky and heavy, almost primitive compared to the Maximus-class armor worn by the 17th Legion.
What are your plans for assault?
Argal Tal took a breath and prepared to speak damnation. Without knowing why, he couldn't keep from thinking of Lorgar's words to him, spoken so long ago. You are Argal Tal. You were born on Colchis in the village of Singruk to a carpenter and a seamstress. Your name means the last angel in the dialect of the Southern Steppes tribes. He thought briefly of his parents, 200 years dead now. He had never visited their graves. He wasn't even sure where they might be. His father had been a quiet man with kind eyes, who had round shoulders from a lifetime of devotion to his craft. His mother was a mouse of a woman, with dark eyes and black hair in the ringlets preferred by the southern tribes. She had smiled a great deal. It was his abiding memory of her. How far he'd come, in distance and time, from their riverside hut of packed mud and straw. He could almost feel the river water on his hands now, cooling to the touch, even as it sparkled in the oppressive Colchisian sun. He had four older sisters, each as distant and dead as his parents. They had wept when the Legion came for him, though at the time he couldn't understand why. All he could see was the adventure, the joy in being chosen by the holy warriors. The youngest, Lakisha, only a year older than he was, had given him a necklace of desert dog teeth that she'd made herself. He felt it now, tied around his wrist, bound there each dawn upon rising and completing his meditations. The original string had long since rotted away, but he threaded the jackal teeth onto a new cord with a passing of every few years. His oldest sister, Dumara, had spent every day telling him that he was good for nothing but getting underfoot, but she had no unkind words that day, and instead brought him a blanket of goat's wool to take with him.
"He will not require that," the massive grey warrior had declared in a machine voice.
Dumara flinched back, clutching the blanket to her chest. Instead of offering it to the boy, she kissed his cheek instead. She was crying too. He remembered how her tears made his face wet, and he hoped the warrior didn't think it was he who'd been crying. He had to look brave, else the warrior might not choose him after all.
"What is the boy's name?" the warrior demanded.
His mother had surprised him with a question of her own.
"What is your name, warrior?"
"Erebus. My name is Erebus."
"Thank you, Lord Erebus. This is my son, Argel Tal."
Argel Tal, the last angel. He'd been born as a sickly little thing during a year of blight and drought, and was given a name to mark him as the last child his mother would ever bring into their dry, thirsty world.
"Forgive me,"
he whispered now. He hadn't meant to speak the words aloud, but didn't regret doing so.
"Brother," Tirizian's voice crackled, "repeat, please."
Argel Tal's grey eyes hardened to flint.
"All word bearers," he said, "open fire."